We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Dan McNeil, Danny Parkins.
Here we go!
Afternoons on The Score.
We're talking to Steve Stone here, McNeil and Parkins on The Score. Stoney, we were joking before you came on that sometimes it felt like the White Sox broadcast booth was practicing social distancing before it was cool with you and Hawk at the other opposite ends of the booth all those years.
We are waiting on a report on Todd Frazier.
All right, I just saw him.
And?
So there was some room in between us, certainly.
What is your pre-game routine, if you will, in order to be really comfortable before you call a baseball game?
Well, it's gotten to be music, actually. I like mostly rock music, so Pour Some Sugar on Me with Def Leppard has become one of my favorites, and when I wanted to get going, I would put that on.
Pour Some Sugar on All of Us here, I guess. Great song.
You can only tell one Harry Carey drinking story. Which one are you telling?
That's like asking Henny Youngman to tell one joke. The people don't know Henny Youngman, but let's take it to...
I do, Steve.
How are you all? I'm glad to be here. Take my wife, please. I take my wife everywhere, but she finds her way home. I said, where do you want to go for your anniversary? She said, I want to go somewhere I've never been before. I said, try the kitchen. I love this crowd.
They arrange for President Reagan to call Harry in the booth. He gets the call, they put it through, and here's President Reagan.
Well, Harry, thank you very much. You know, in a few months, I'm going to be out of work, and I thought I might as well audition.
And then he starts talking about Nancy Reagan's ties to Chicago. He said, you know, my wife, Nancy, has some ties to Chicago. And then Harry said, Mr. President, I got to hang up. Bobby Dernier just got a bunt single, and it looks like the Cubs have a rally going. And click, he hung up on the President of the United States in mid-Nancy Reagan story. So, yeah, that's kind of the way Harry did things.
It's not often that the President of the United States has trouble getting a few words in edgewise.
Holy cow! Yo! Saddle up! Lock and load!
The McNeil and Parkins Show. Afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
Thank you for hanging out with us. Quarantine day 3-ish?
Yes, it's day 3. Today's Wednesday. Third day of the week. The work week, anyway. Fourth day of the week. Third day of the work week. Third day. What?
I just know a lot of people have been in doing the stay-at-home thing longer than just this work week, but in terms of us broadcasting from home, this is day 3. So we'll call it quarantine day 3.
Yes, quarantine 3, right. Rest of the world, maybe 10, but us, 3. And what you said yesterday about Scorehouse, if the coronavirus would have been more up front, maybe 3 days earlier than it was, we never would have gotten on those planes, is 100% correct. You were right about that. Thank God we got our licks in, right? And no one got sick, at least not that we know of.
Yeah, I mean, you came back sick.
Well, I came back sick and heard from my therapist today who tested positive for COVID-19. And he checked my temperature on Wednesday the 11th, I think, on my fifth day of having a fever. So he and I couldn't help but wonder if I came back from Arizona positive and got him sick and now am past the stage of contagion. When it becomes available, I will go get a test to find out.
Scary times, man. You know, it's odd. Like it was obviously out there in the news, but it wasn't out there in the news in the way that it probably should have been. And it was a mistake for all
of
us.
We joked about it.
Yes.
We were making jokes about it in Arizona.
It was a mistake for all of us to get into an airplane and an airport and then live in a house together for
a week. And sit around a fire with the evil weed being shared. Yeah, Nine sets of lips over the week we were there.
It was a mistake, and hopefully we all come out of it fine, and some of us maybe will never know. Some of us will figure it out. Who knows? But, yeah, if we could do it again, I'm pretty sure we wouldn't do that because, yeah, I believe that Wednesday, Entercom said all non-essential travel is done. Mm-hmm. And I think Scorehouse certainly would have fallen under non-essential travel.
Yeah. If
Scorehouse.
If not, it maybe sometime down the road. Essential for us, but not necessarily essential for the betterment of the Western world.
Yeah, so I don't know how much you want to get into this, and we don't have to at all if you don't want to, but you posited to Anthony something that you and I had talked about for a while one time off the air, and I think we've hinted around it multiple times in talking about the industry and talking shop, the idea that Howard's the only one who won at radio. I would throw out some other names if you're defining it through the highest of ways of which you are defining winning at radio, but by any measure, you and I, and especially you, are already successes at the radio game. But maybe explain what you mean to that question, because I feel like if you're outside of the industry, you don't really get it.
Yeah, let me sleep on that, if you don't mind.
Okay.
And we can revisit tomorrow after I've had a chance to think about how far I want to go on that one. But
And
I would add, yes, there probably are more than just Howard Stern, but I think he has created the ultimate dream for anybody who's ever wanted to be in talk radio of any genre. And Dan Patrick probably is a very similar boat, even though it's now mostly a television show. It's still a radio show in its purest sense of the definition, I think. I would put him in there, too. But let me sleep on that and see, just if you don't mind, just how far I want to go. The timing on this conversation is not optimal because
no pressure, man. No pressure.
No. I opened my mouth, so I probably should back it up. I just want a little bit of time to compose my thoughts on how far to go because I don't want to put myself in trouble.
I'll do this for anyone who does it, just to put a quick bow on it today.
Yeah.
Howard Stern continuously would quit imperfect jobs that did not allow him to be him. He would fall up with his talent, work his way up, and would overcome bosses who did not support him by doing it his way, would overcome the federal government suing him, fining him, suing his bosses, fining his bosses, continuing to do it his way, and then ultimately cashed in and launched basically a new medium in satellite radio and now has a net worth of $600 million and has always stayed loyal to his producer, his sound man, his sidekick, and everyone else along the way and has built an industry around itself. And so in terms of never really taking it from the corporate man, staying loyal to who you were as a performer, staying loyal to those around you, he is the ultimate winner in radio. So that is how we had defined winning in radio, but we can get back to personalizing it maybe tomorrow or maybe into the future. So
April 1.
And maybe perfect. So you yesterday, Mac, said that if you wanted to basically have the conversation of how much baseball needs to be played in order for us to feel like the baseball season was legitimate. And Jeff Passan overnight had a report that basically talked about where baseball was in its coronavirus response. And it was very detailed, very thorough. And we don't get into all of it because some of it was CBA related, and it was about minor leaguers getting paid and stadium workers and like all very worthwhile issues, but like he very clearly is sourced at the highest levels of these conversations, and he kind of gave like a state of the state address with regards to baseball. And the long and the short of it is we're not gonna have baseball anytime soon. We don't know when that'll be, but we're not gonna have it anytime soon. And then over at The Athletic, Jason Stark, with some help from his colleague Ken Rosenthal, wrote a piece on hypotheticals and like basically using this time as an opportunity for baseball to try a bunch of new things, because if this season ends up getting played where there will clearly be an asterisk attached to it because they can't play a lot of games to make it representative, they may as well try a bunch of different things to see if they love it, they hate it, if it's just different for being different, or whatever the case may be. And he had Joe Maddon quoted on the record as being in favor of trying a whole lot of things, and he had an executive quoted anonymously that basically said, if we can't play 120 games, we won't be crowning the true champion, so we may as well throw a bunch of stuff against the wall and see what sticks. And so this was a very well-sourced piece. And I have the things that are being kicked around by some baseball people, and I'm going to go through them with you. We can go by one, and I want you and Shep and Tanny and everyone to weigh in on what you think about it, all right?
Okay, sounds good. My first thought is not a positive one right out of the chute, because it sounds like it's something that would be reserved for the lower levels when you're just putting the best athletes in the world at their craft out there, and you're involved in a two-month situation where it's trial and error and see what you like. That sounds like something for the minor leagues or amateur sports. That doesn't sound like a professional sports league to me.
I understand exactly why you would say that. And, you know, basically the argument that was in this article was some season is better than no season, and some season economically might be necessary. So if they're going to play some baseball, both to be a diversion for the public and to get some of the television revenue and all of that, they may as well do something. One thing that was presented as was starting the season with the All-Star Game. The first game of the year is the All-Star Game, so you get to see all of the stars, and you put it out there, and you start the season with a bang, and everybody gets on one footing, and so you, it's a celebration of baseball, and it's a celebration of live sports returning, and it's a reminder of what the best look like when they're playing that game. What do you guys think?
Yeah, who's selecting the team? What is that predicated on? How they performed last year, or is this just flat-out a popularity contest?
No idea. Just okay. These are all just suggestions. There are clearly details that would need to be worked through. But I mean, you could do fan voting, you could do player voting, and you could say, "Hey, look, we know Mike Trout's going to be there. We know that Altuve is going to be." You know, we could probably come to some reasonable consensus among baseball fans, media, executives, coaches, etc., and say these are 40 of the best players in the world.
I will watch it, but only because of the job. And then, Shep, you take it after this, but I would much rather see my team open its meaningless season than watch All-Stars. What do you think, Shep?
Yeah, I'm same way as you, Mac. If it's going to be the All-Star game, then there's days of travel to get to the All-Star game. There's a day or two of travel to get everyone back to their home ballparks, home cities, to get set for their opening days. That's 2 or 3 days off the baseball calendar. I'd rather have that in terms of games actually counting towards the schedule than seeing an All-Star game that, sure, your stars are there, but it doesn't matter for anything. It doesn't count for anything. Give me the real games instead.
Tanny?
I'm always one for festivities, so I think I like that, actually. I think that would be a good, you know, welcome back baseball sort of thing. I'd be down for that. I mean, there's no way to me when you talk about just a couple of games off the schedule, it's going to matter at that point, you know, so why not just do a thing like that everyone can feel good about? So I'd be game with that.
To me, a big part of it will feel like if we're playing 40 games, then sure, play an All-Star game because there's no difference between 40 and 43. But if we're playing 100 games, then put an All-Star game in the middle and like give me an opening day that'll feel like it matters. So a big part of that one to me is how many games are we going to get? If this thing is going to just be we're playing baseball in August, September, and October, then there's no real harm in making a charade of the entire thing.
I'm going to make this assumption that if they start with an All-Star game, that it's not going to be a conventional schedule that you would typically see where they're playing 6 times a week. I'm guessing they would scale the schedule back considerably and have a couple days off in between games just because of the ramping up aspect and to keep everyone healthy. It's not something that they've done before. So I'm guessing the schedule is going to be a little more spread out, so you wouldn't be like, you know, shoving, you know, 100 games into a few months.
Well, actually, one of the proposals was actually doing the opposite, Tanny. It was expanding rosters so that you could have way more pitchers, so that pitchers would not have to throw as much, and then the players' union apparently is on board because they want to play as many games as possible, obviously, because the more they play, the more money that they're going to be able to get on their contract. And this is the second thing that has been proposed, is at least one doubleheader a week, maybe two, and maybe seven-inning doubleheaders. So instead of 2 9-inning games, let's play two. Let's play two, but it's seven innings instead of nine.
Let's play two-ish.
Let's play two-ish.
I'm okay with that.
I kind of think that's awesome.
Yeah, 9 innings takes about what? What's the average length of a ball game last year? 3 hours and 20 minutes?
I think 305, somewhere around there, yeah.
Was it that short? I thought it was a little bit longer than that. But if you want to make that 2.5, I'm in. Sign me up for it.
Yeah, they eliminated the catcher going out there 7 times a game. That sounded only like 5 times a game now, so that took out a whole minute, Mac. The averages are down that low. I think it'd be neat. I think it'd be a cool concept of seeing doubleheaders. I don't know, the era that my dad grew up in, doubleheaders were a regular thing, and I get it. The game's different now. Your reliance on starting pitching is different now. But I think it'd be cool to have scheduled doubleheaders just be part of it. If you're doing it that crazily and that different, I'm fine with playing more games and getting a better feel and getting more of a sample size than if you're just to play, all right, 6 games and 1 day off every week.
I worry about the quality of play at that point with so many doubleheaders, and I know you're expanding the rosters, but generally I think it's going to provide for an inferior product. I mean,
yes.
I can deal with them not playing as often. I don't need them to shoehorn all these games in there. But Herb's back here saying, what about the board ops that have to do all those doubleheaders? It's a fair question.
You know, I read every article about this, guys. And
yeah,
they, right? It wasn't in there. They just were not concerned with the radio network.
As a kid, I loved the pure doubleheaders to go to the game. But as an adult, I mean, it's not for me. But it was so what? If it would get people to the ballpark and... I do also fear the quality of play dropping, but some of my fondest memories of going to both sides of town were doubleheaders. Are you kidding me? I'm getting the Braves twice. I'm going to get to see Hank Aaron bat maybe 10 times today at Wrigley Field. That was a big thing, but as an older guy, I want nothing to do with sitting in a ballpark for six, eight hours.
There, Mac. Yeah. Because you don't have to sit at the ballpark. How many extra day games, 1:20 starts or 1 o'clock starts, are we talking for the Cubs if we're bringing in this many doubleheaders late in the summer?
Ooh, that's a good point.
All of a sudden,
Mac's
on board.
A lot of late arrivals for the mob.
All right. So what we're doing here is these are the proposals that some within the game are willing to consider if baseball has to come back and drastically change this season. Starting with an all-star game was one. Seven-inning doubleheaders, at least one a week is another. This was the third one that is being discussed, at least in some circles within the game. Instituting the minor league tiebreaker rule because they wouldn't want games to last a long time if they have to squeeze in a bunch of games in short order and they're playing doubleheaders. They don't want 13, 14, 15-inning marathons. If anyone doesn't remember, since 2018, if a game goes to extra innings in the minors, a runner starts the top and bottom of each inning on second base to try to get the game to wrap up sooner. Do we like the idea of the minor league tiebreaker runner on second rule for all baseball games in 2020?
I find second base to be a bit too generous. I don't have the ability to tweak it here, so I would ratify that. But if I could write the rule, it would be first base. The inning starts with a runner on first. I think putting a runner in scoring position is way too generous.
Yeah, if you're going to play the games, then play the games. You don't have to have a cute rule at the end of them in order just to get it done. I know it kind of is the opposite of what I said there in regards to the seven-inning doubleheaders, but if you're going to play the game, then play the game, and don't tweak the way that they've ended traditionally. It's still part of it. It ends up going 13 innings, it goes 13 innings. I'm against that one, too.
Yeah, I like starting with the leadoff walk. Just have the guy walk the guys because that run almost always scores. So I'm cool with that. Like Mac's idea, starting at first, that'd be all right with me. Anything is gonna fly here. I think we're gonna be able to explore new opportunities to end these games and get people involved. And you know, I think everyone's gonna be open to pretty much any creative idea they have as long as they have their baseball. So yeah, I'd be up for that.
That's how I feel on this one, Tanny. You guys know that I was against the pass interference reviewable thing in the NFL the second that it was proposed, and I thought it was just like opening Pandora's box unnecessarily, and there were going to be a bunch of unintended consequences, and we'll see if they put it back, and they go back to how it was. I feel like if it is going to be a shortened season, just try some stuff that's not going to bother me in that level. It's like they're already doing it at the minor leagues, and if we hate it, all right, fine. How many games go to extra innings anyway? Like, what's the percentage? 5% of games? So if 5% of the games that come back end up having a kind of a quirky extra inning rule, I don't think that's going to feel like a huge deal given the odd circumstances of everything else in the sport. And then this was the last biggest one. And again, these are the proposed things that are being discussed with Major League Baseball if they play a season, what it would look like. And it is expanding the postseason and potentially playing games at neutral warm weather sites or in domed stadiums in order to be able to play the season longer. First one, expanding the postseason. If you're going to play an 80-game regular season, that's not going to crown a true champion. In the article, they used the Nationals last year as the example. Through 80 games, they were in 10th place in the National League. So you would have needed 10 teams from each league to make the playoffs. They end up winning the World Series. So if you're going to play a shortened season and the regular season will do less of a good job of representing who the actual best team is, you would need to expand the playoffs to give a team a chance who like suffered some early injuries because of the weirdness of this truncated baseball season. You got to expand the playoffs if you're going to be shortening the regular season.
I'd go the other direction. I'd make it harder to get in. I don't know. Play 60 games and then invite everybody in. What are you really rewarding, despite the fact that there might be some things that were out of your control that led to your underachieving? Big boys rules. That's the way it shook out. We had something rock the country, rock the world, and we can only play 60 games. I have no interest in seeing a 14 team playoff format under any circumstances.
Yeah, baseball to me is the ultimate sport of sample size, and it's the one that at the end of the year, you know who the great teams are, you know who the awful ones are, you have 162 games to tell you. I get it, you're only going to get 2, maybe 3 months in this situation of a regular season to tell you that, so your sample size isn't going to be as nearly as high, it's not going to be nearly as telling as it is literally every other year. But in that, make up for it another way. Then make the regular season more important. Don't reward the flukish team that might have played out over their skis for a couple of weeks to start the year and stumble into a postseason bid as the 12th best team or whatever it might be in baseball and get a playoff spot, then get hot. I think you make it harder. I think you take it to the level of, all right, almost like the olden days of you're straight to the league championship series, or heck, you're straight to the World Series depending on your record.
I agree with Shep. You know, the great Phil Leotardo, God rest his soul, he once said either it has meaning or no meaning. And I think in baseball, I'm sorry, if you're one of those talented teams that gets off to a bad start, too bad, so sad.
Yeah,
bring it back to the old school where just division winners, I'd take away the wild card, give the best record in the league the bye to the ALCS and just let it go from there. Yeah, I mean, I don't care. It's going to be about talent. Talent will prevail. I think that's what we have to do in a shortened season like this.
See, now maybe I'm just less of a traditionalist and willing to try things for one season. Why not say, hey, we missed out on the NCAA tournament. This year, baseball is going to be more like that. And there will be
God,
some...
Then why play a regular season? Why not?
For entertainment.
Start?
You just want a day off.
No, for yeah, I do love that.
Chicago's,
I do love the day off.
Chicago's not worthy if
for
breaking
entertainment.
Down the baseball tournament.
At the rate these pitchers blow out their arms, this whole thing, if the whole whack is going to have an asterisk on it, given how fragile the life of a pitcher is, man, I want nothing to do with this.
See,
honestly,
but the players are going to want to play, and the owners are going to like they're going to want their money, and the owners are going to want their money, and the TV partners are going to want their money, and I think that fans will quickly forget because like why play, man? We're going to need some normalcy and some diversion and some like, hey, all right, well, we got through this and America's pastime is back. Like I think it's going to be very therapeutic to see baseball again.
That's great for the people of Bridgeport. But if Michael Kopech gets hurt again in a meaningless game in September when they are already telling you there is not going to be a pure champion, we are not going to regard this year's postseason winner as a World Series champion, what is the point?
I think they would regard them as the World Series champion. I just think all of us would know, oh, that was the, you know.
Well, but if you're going to regard somebody a World Series champion, then you have to keep it as true to the rules that have been in place as possible. And talking about implementing minor league extra innings rules and shortening games to 7 innings just flies in the face of everything that for 100+ years almost has determined how you win a World Series.
But not what about drastic times, drastic measures? Like, this isn't what you would do next year, but for this year, if you're going to crown a champion, okay, you were the coronavirus champion.
It's drastic times for United States citizens. Is it drastic times for Major League Baseball? Like, it's different. It's going to be a shortened season. Is it, I mean, do you have to go drastic measures to recoup every dollar that's lost? I just have some integrity with it. I know Rob Manfred just thinks that it's a piece of metal, but tell that to the 26 players on each of the 30 teams.
Might be 36 if they expand the roster, Shep.
That's true.
Be a football team.
The one that I the neutral site thing, that's one that I would figure out a way to avoid at any and all costs.
That's the only one I like.
Well, but here's the you'll be playing a World Series in an empty stadium.
Well, they're going to be playing before empty stadia anyway, though, right? I mean, that's a real good possibility.
Sure.
If baseball gets together, that doesn't mean they're going to allow fans to come in.
Well, okay, in that circumstance, yes. I was saying if there is a way to do this and you're actually putting people at Wrigley Field, well, then you don't then want to then put the World Series, because it's too cold, down in Texas, and you got two teams not from Texas in there, because you'll have 8,000 people at your World Series game. But yes, you're right. If they're playing the full season with no one there, then I guess it doesn't really matter.
Cold weather baseball sucks, too.
It does.
I mean, let's call it what it is. 2016, as late as it went, the Cubs and Indians were pretty fortunate, and so were the fans. It wasn't that bad for early November.
This texter makes a point, man, that it's certainly how I think people are going to feel. After no sports for 3 months or so, I can't imagine possibly having Major League Baseball available and saying, what's the point? Like, I just feel like people will be so starved for professional sports or sports of any kind that, yeah, if it's not perfect, it's better than nothing.
Okay, that might be for the consumer, but as Shep said a couple minutes ago, does that mean it's good for those who are providing the consumer with its product on a typical basis? And if this is rendered asterisked, I don't know if you can ask teams fairly to put their best effort. I don't find it to be a worthwhile endeavor.
It's an interesting article. You should read it. Jason Stark at The Athletic and Jeff Passan over at ESPN. We had a doctor on earlier, Dr. Rob Citrenberg, the director of infectious diseases at Advocate Lutheran General Hospital. He said, listen, there's a real chance that baseball won't be played at all this year based on how this is going. So it might all be moot, but they are at least experimenting and at least discussing the possibility of, if they play, to have it look very, very different for this season. It's McNeil and Park. It's on the Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Everybody thinks, oh, mm-hmm. Seattle's the nuts.
I'll be among them.
Gotta love it. McNeil and Parkins on The Score. If you missed BJ Armstrong for Score Stories, we'll play you our favorite one to end the show today. I also highly recommend our conversation with Dr. Rob Citrenberg, the Director of Infectious Diseases over at Advocate. It was at 3 o'clock. Check out the podcast, 670thescore.com. He was informative. He answered all of our questions, and he's promised to come on next week. And I also just heard from Matt Spiegel. Joe Buck will be his guest on Hit and Run this Sunday. So
awesome.
Be sure to tune in to Hit and Run. They have a great relationship, and it's always fascinating. And Joe Buck's been doing real fun videos where he does play-by-play when people submit theirs. I know he did one for our guy Adam Hogue. He did one for Mina Kimes, and he's done one for just random people. He does videos play-by-play. Fox produces them up. It's been a cool use of social media for Joe
yes,
Buck.
Yes, absolutely. Keeping it light, keeping people entertained. That's good. That's good. Celebrities are punching in. When we heard Matthew McConaughey a little while ago with his little speech he put out in social media, I was hearing, I would love to hear Rust Cole, his character, yes, in True Detective Season 1, talk about how he wishes the virus would walk hand in hand with the other viruses into eternity and just die, whatever that was in Season 1.
This place is like somebody's memory of a town.
Yeah, this virus is like someone's memory. Walk hand in hand to extinction. That's the word I was looking for.
What do you think the average IQ of this group is, huh?
Can you see Texas up there on your high horse?
So good. That's a good thing to rewatch as you're sitting at home looking for some entertainment. But you had a baseball thought for one of our local teams off the idea of potential radical changes to this baseball season, Dan?
Well, you know, I've already had this thought, and I suppose the horse has left the barn. When you talked about one of the proposals of this alternate universe of baseball 2020, where they open the season with an all-star game, my reaction was a negative one because I want to see my team. And already lost is the momentum the White Sox were gaining in February and early in March. And I am a believer in clubhouse chemistry. All I can relate to is the experiences I had as an amateur athlete and at a pretty decent level in both baseball and football. And invariably, when we had good training camps, the year started well. And we all saw it in Glendale. We were there for one day. But there wasn't a doubt in my mind the vibe that existed among White Sox fans in the offseason over all of the moves and guys getting healthy was present in that White Sox clubhouse. All of that has been put completely on hold, and I am a believer in clubhouse togetherness and that meaning something, even in a game that is largely individual like baseball. So I suppose no matter how you cut this thing, once life gets back to some form of normal, that's going to be lost. But that would just further retard whatever momentum the White Sox did seem to gain in that time they spent getting to know each other, because that was an electric clubhouse that day we spent there, and I don't think that was deniable.
I don't think it's deniable either. I would think that that would be something that would be able to be regained and restarted fairly easily.
Maybe.
And then also, I think you can make an argument that the White Sox would be a team that would actually benefit more from a delayed start because Michael Kopech could be there opening day. And it's a shortened season, and so now you don't need to worry about his innings limit. So a guy who you were going to say, ah, we got to keep him on the shelf for April, May, and maybe a little bit of June, and we got to spread out his 120 innings.
Yeah.
Well, if you're only playing 3 months, Michael Kopech could be there opening day. He could be in your rotation, and you won't even have to worry about him approaching that innings limit. So I think you could make an argument that it would actually benefit a team like that.
Okay, that was a special thing they had going on there, and some
agreed.
People say it's, you know, it's about scoring runs and it's about preventing runs, and those things are true, but I liked the vibe, and I hope that's something that they can restart the engines on, that because it was real positive, and I am a believer. Call me silly and living in a world of delusion, but that's how I feel about sports.
Earlier today, we've all kind of been trying to stick together as a Score family, and everyone's doing it from home. And, you know, these are interesting circumstances, certainly, for all of us. And everyone's kind of adjusting in their particular set of worlds. And ours is easier than many, and we're aware of that. But I was not aware that Bernstein and McKnight, to get over one of the technological hurdles that they had, Connor broadcast from Bernstein's house today, but he didn't do it in the same place as him. He did it from his basement because Dan had a better Wi-Fi situation than Connor did. And so one of the ways that they're working around their technological stuff is Connor practices social distancing, goes into Dan's house, gets on his Wi-Fi, but doesn't actually hang out with Dan. Kind of seems like an ideal situation.
Yeah, sounds very Opie and Anthony. That's interesting because there was a definitive difference in the quality of their units, if you'll pardon the expression. I'm talking about the mobile units they're using. I thought there was a lot of disparity in the quality today between the two, and I didn't notice that yesterday when I checked in. And everyone's doing the best they can. I promise I'm not being critical when I said that, but one sounded better than the other.
Yeah, I honestly was doing things today. I didn't hear much of it. I saw their videos online, and it was pretty funny. But I'm told that there was a piece of audio from Dan that you wanted to give a spin in the interest of nostalgia, maybe?
That could be the case, yeah. Seattle 96, Bulls and Sonics, let her rip.
Like, in general, my least favorite thing was covering any Dennis Rodman walking gangbang kind of thing where he wouldn't stop and he made you – we had to walk in this mass of people. We're tripping over each other. We're kicking each other in the balls. It was just – it was brutal. He never had anything interesting to say unless it was something contrivedly controversial. It was just – it was dehumanizing and stupid. But when you're talking about embarrassing, I think I've told the story before, but it was a day I was covering a spring training game. I forgot if it was White Sox or Cubs, and they were playing Seattle. And Lou Piniella was the manager. And North and Jiggets, Mike North, was doing Talk to an Italian Day. And it was like,
oh, God.
And it was celebrate.
One of those
only
days that ends in Y?
Yeah, it was just, but it was literally, Jesse, I want to talk to Italians today, and only Italians. Put any Italian you can find. So I got a big, you know, brick cell phone, and it rings, and it's Jesse. Hey, Bernsey, Mike says you got to put Lou Piniella on. You got to put Lou Piniella on. He's only talking to Italians, and he says you have to get Lou Piniella. I'm like, yeah, but just do it. Mike's yelling at me. You got to get Lou Piniella on the air. So it's before the game, and I'm, you know, just, it's the last thing you want to do. Booking guests was never, a lot of reporters, it's because of your relationships and because of what you have to do, it sort of compromises you to be a field producer and doing it. And it's why I really appreciate it with guys like Bruce and David Schuster and that, because trust me, I understand how difficult
it can
be.
It's huge.
Believe me. It's something that we always appreciate from this end of it. So I go to Lou Piniella, and he's like, what do you want? And I explained to him what's going on. And I said, you know, Mike North, he's a host of the show. He's kind of wacky. And he said he wants to put you on because he's only talking to Italian guys. And Lou gets the Lou smile, right? You know where this is going, right?
Yes, of course.
Because Lou starts laughing. He's like, what the hell you want to talk to me for? And I said, well, he just does. He goes,
Panela's not Italian. It's Spanish. It's Spanish. It's not Italian. I'm not Italian at all. So he just starts laughing, and I just sort of, like you say, kind of slink away. So I called
Jesse. Oh, God.
And I called Jesse, because, I mean, I knew that. And I said, Jesse, he's not going to do it. He's not Italian. Oh, he's not? Okay, forget it then. I'll tell Mike.
That's so good.
Ridiculous.
I knew that too. As
do
you know,
think,
when,
do you think Bernstein really knew that Pinella wasn't Italian? Because why would he ask and not just say to Jesse on the front end, "Hey, you know, Lou Pinella, not Italian."
Yeah, I really that is a great point that he didn't consider that he was already lamenting the fact that he had to stoop to the lowly duties of a producer when he's reporting on the road and asked to book a guest. Oh, that's hysterical.
Bernstein really upselling his host, too. Yeah, he's wacky, and he wants a thing.
Yeah, what a guy. He's not wrong, but what a teammate.
Yeah, yeah. A secret Mexican, just like we were talking about Ted Williams last week, right? He's not Italian. He's Lou Pinella. Yeah, that was, oh, man, anytime you want to do Seattle from 96, that's one of the great score road trips of all time. Jiggets and North were out there. Terry Bors and I were out there doing afternoons. Bernsey was the field reporter. We had a blast on the air. We had a blast socially. It was my first trip to the Emerald City, and I fell in love with it, and I felt so good about the shows we were doing because Terry Bors and I had a reputation, especially with management, of not being positive enough about our local teams, because Jiggets and North were the super fans, and we were too critical of the Bears, and we weren't as big a Bulls fans as we were supposed to be. So when they lose the game in the middle of the week, which extends the series to Friday night, I convinced the program director, Ron Gleason. I say, there's no reason for us to fly home tomorrow. You say we're not Bulls fans. We'll take the angle that we're not leaving until the Larry O'Brien trophy is safely secured in Jerry Krause's suitcase. So he said, if everybody agrees to stay, you guys can hang out a few more days. The White Sox just happened to be in our hotel. I remember this oh so well because when they were checking in that Tuesday evening, or maybe it was Wednesday night, Terry Bevington, the manager, was having an impossible time using his AT&T calling card to transfer charges. I offered to help him in the lobby of the hotel, and he said, I can't figure this out. I said, Terry, punch in the number you're calling first, and then a bell's going to ring. And he tried. He couldn't figure it out, so he went behind. He's embarrassed to have a member of the local radio community trying to help him out, so he went to somebody who was behind the desk at the hotel. But the legendary Sonic Slick Watts was on the show. Del Harris came by. Luke Longley was a friend of the show. He was a regular contributor. John Paxson, back when he used to talk to the Scores afternoon show, stopped by a few times. Dan Patrick. We had ourselves a blast. Robert Chief, Luke, Ron Hopper, myself. Yeah, Seattle was just a hoot. We got to do a show in Seattle if sports ever come back and we can find an excuse to go out there with one of our locals. That's a great city.
I've never been. I would absolutely love that. I would love to go, and I absolutely need to change that, and I would love to live in a time when people were turning to you, Grandpa, for technological help. That is incredible. The old calling card. I got to go to Dan McNeil.
Did you ever have one? Do you remember them?
I know of them, but I never had to have a calling card.
There was a time. That time passed. You know, when guys bought stereo equipment when we were teenagers, early 20s, people would call me, hey, how do I hook up this preamp to my amp? Call me. I'm the guy who, well, then things went a little bit above my pay grade.
When we come back, we'll put a bow on this thing and relive B.J. Armstrong, the best Michael Jordan stories that he told us, coming up on The Score.
That'll do it.
Scorantine, day 3 in the books. And, you know, Mac, listen, I hate the circumstances. It's stressful. It's anxiety-ridden, and I'm not talking about radio. I'm talking about life. But I enjoy this guest list where we have a director of infectious disease on, Dr. Rob Citrenberg, and then we have B.J. Armstrong on, and then we have Opie of Opie and Anthony on. That's a fun, eclectic show. I hope people check it out on the podcast and share it with those people. Let them know The Score is still live and local. Check it out on all your smart speakers, and radio.com and all that. We're hanging out with you guys through all of this mess.
I share your fondness for the diversity. And for a number of years, I have enjoyed more and more as I get older, taking those departures from sports and spending time in the toy department, most of which is what we did today. But our doctor was terrific, very informative, and I look forward to taking another crack at it for four fun-filled hours tomorrow with you clowns.
That's what we're going to do right now. Caller number 6-312-591-6700. You win an MVP haircut experience from Sport Clips. Cut the wait. Download the new Sport Clips Haircuts app and check in. Thank you to Herb Lawrence, who's helping out Chris Tannehill back in our Score studios. Tanny makes it sound better than we are each and every day. Nick Shepkowski is our executive producer. For Dan McNeil, I am Danny Parkins. We are McNeil and Parkins. Here's BJ Armstrong talking about Michael Jordan playing blackjack and then never leaving him alone when he was still playing baseball.
We play all types of games, but I think the funnest game that we would play is we would always, you know, we play blackjack. And the whole team would always play against Michael. You know, he was kind of the house. I always remember that was like everyone on the team was trying to beat him. You know, that was one of the great things that, you know, we would play hard. We would do our thing, but the competitive spirit was always there on everywhere we went. Right. So as soon as we got on the plane, you know, we were there, and it was always the team versus him. And he was the house, and we would always make the rookies shuffle the cards, and we would just play. And we just play for hours. I just remember we wouldn't eat. We wouldn't do anything. We would just play, and everyone was just trying to break the house. And looking back on it, you couldn't break the house, but it was fun trying to do it.
What were the stakes?
Oh, well, the stakes got pretty, you know, they would get pretty high depending on the game. But, you know, we had a lot of fun, a lot of trash talking. But most importantly, I think it was a bonding experience for all of us because everyone participated. You know, it was like one of those things that, you know, you played, and the games were always better when you won. So we had like this, we were in our groove as I think about it. And we had a good flow, a good group of guys that all got along. You know, I've always tried to keep our relationship as when you're a friend, you try to be a good friend. But here it was a unique situation where he retired, right? And there was much going on about why he retired, what happened, what have you. But the one thing that when he announced who he was retiring to the team is, you know, I just said, listen, you have two of the scariest things for anyone, right? You have free time now, and you have a lot of money. And a lot of money and free time normally equals problems, right? It equals trouble. And I just wanted to make sure to be a good friend. That's all I wanted to do, is be a good friend to him, just like everyone else, and to make sure that we all checked in with him from time to time, whatever he was going to do. So during this process, we would just check in, and he would check in. And I just always thought it was, you know, strange at the time, is that he was still very detailed. I mean, that's the one thing I don't know how many people really know, but Michael was very detailed about the scouting reports and the things he would do as he would prepare for the game. And he always wanted to know the scouting reports. And I thought, why does he care? But hey, if we can talk, if we can, you know, discuss certain things, and if that's what we're going to just talk about. But he was very, very interested in what teams were going to do. Then he started asking me about need plays at the end of the games. He wanted to know, you know, just things that, you know, people who don't, you know, if you're just talking basketball, you're just talking about, you know, certain things. But he wanted to know the details of the game. He wanted to know the play calls. He wanted to know the spacing on the floor. He wanted to know all of these things that we would discuss as if we were playing. And I just thought, well, the light's never off. But I knew the light was never going to go off with him, because everyone that knows him, he's going to compete in something. And lo and behold, those conversations turned into one day he shows up and says, hey, what are you doing? Let's go to breakfast and hang out. And as to say, the rest is history, as he eventually did come back. But he was always very intrigued. And I think mentally he stayed engaged into the game, and he continued to watch the game mentally as he was, you know, watching it from afar. But I just think that was the way he thought about it. You know, he was, you know, he always knew physically he had gifts. But mentally, he was able to see the game, understand the game, and then go out there and execute it, because he had a huge advantage as an athlete himself, but mentally he was just as strong or stronger than anyone else that played.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.